Hello and welcome to this new edition of So French, the show about the twists and turns, intrigues and insights to all things French.
Every 2 weeks we select the best, most interesting and fascinating of French news stories, all brought to you from our studio in the heart of Paris. My name is Stefan de Vries.
And my name is Sarah Bertelson.
This week we'll take you to the Island of Beauty. It was front page news this week as they try to push through their nationalist agenda when the president makes his first official visit to Napoleon's birthplace.
And we'll talk food and stars and unbearable pressure.
And of course, Maud Descamps is with us for a brand new word of the week.
But first, after rain comes...
sunshine?
Snow.
Oh.
Snow. snow and more snow.
More snow to come, yeah.
It's white in Paris.
Yeah, it's very nice actually. But it's somehow disturbs the people.
Yeah, there's been a couple of unusual days.
Yeah, if you look on social media, Instagram, etc., the only photos Parisian people are posting now is of the
pictures
snow.
Pictures of snow.
Yeah,
exactly. But it has created some quite a big interruptions, especially when it comes to transportation. Of course, no buses were running, very few cars. I mean, we're talking about 15 centimeters maybe of snow.
Yeah, but that's the most in 30 years.
Yes, and it's, and you know, most Parisian, or all, I would say, Parisian cars are French cars are without any kind of winter tires,
yeah,
or snow chains or anything like that. So I mean, it's,
and but what surprises me is that the sidewalks are not clean. Actually, it's the responsibility of the homeowners or the shop owners to clean the sidewalk in front of their house, but nobody's doing it.
But I think it's just people are taken by surprise. I mean, we generally have some snow in Paris,
yeah,
every year, but it's quite rare that it actually stays for more than a couple of hours.
Yeah, yeah. But now it stays for 2, 3, 4 days, and then there's more snow coming this weekend. Mm.
Yeah. Only people very, very happy about this are, of course,
Children.
Delighted, jumping, yeah, out of bed in the morning and very excited to get out to this new world that they're, yeah, discovering. But and of course, first in line to bear the brunt, or to, you know, to confront this very chilly weather. We are sub-zero temperatures at,
yeah,
the moment. Or of course, the homeless people.
Living in the streets.
Rough, yeah, and outside. And there are, as we've been talking about earlier, quite a few of those.
Yeah.
Especially in the Paris region.
Yeah, we talked about a couple of episodes ago about the fact that the number of homeless people in France doubled from 70,000 to 140,000 in about 10 years. 140,000, well, one MP thought that was fake news. He said there are only 50 in the whole of Paris.
This is a quite crazy story.
Yeah,
but yes, but
yeah,
this is a junior minister in the Emmanuel Macron government who last week claimed that there was only 50 homeless people in Paris. I do not know where this person lives, because
or if he ever walks around in Paris.
If I go out, I mean, in my neighborhood, I mean, it's clear that you can just take a stroll around your neighborhood and you will see at least 20-25 homeless people. So I don't know where he comes from.
Yeah, it's very strange, and the numbers are not very clear for the Paris region, but there are at least 20,000 to 30,000 in the whole Paris region.
And you have neighborhoods where you have hundreds, because just to remind people that, of course, you have also the migrants who come,
yeah,
and who are waiting for their asylum applications to be processed or even to be first registered as asylum seekers. And many of these, mostly young men, but also families and with children, they sleep rough and they stay in certain neighborhoods, and there's hundreds of them. And of course, with these freezing temperatures, their life is very, very difficult.
So this was one person, a junior minister, saying, well, there are only 50.
But he was defended.
Yeah.
He was defended this week then by another
silly remark, we
well,
could
but
say.
This time an MP from the La République En Marche, Emmanuel Macron's party. His name is Sylvain Maillard. So he defended his colleague's remarks about the 50 homeless people, but he also added a layer to the story.
Yes, absolutely. Let's listen to him, what he said exactly.
Et ce qu'il faut savoir, c'est que même dans les cas de grand froid, certains SDF ne souhaitent pas être mis à l'abri, souhaitent rester seuls dans la rue. C'est leur choix. Rien ne nous oblige, rien ne les oblige à être mis à l'abri.
Yeah, so he says something that for the majority of the homeless people, it's their own choice. They even refuse to be put in homes. Now, these are two remarks by members of Emmanuel Macron's government or party.
What do you think is the reason for this?
Yeah,
either you could say that they're living in some kind of parallel universe, or do you think that they may be trying to protect their president, who actually made some quite clear promises?
Yeah, maybe he did. Of course, Emmanuel Macron said earlier last year in the summer that before the end of 2017, there will be no more homeless people in the streets of France. Well, he didn't really succeed in that ambition. Interestingly enough is that Macron, in his speeches, he seems very humane when it comes to migrants, but in the actions, not so much. We spoke a lot about Calais, of course.
Many are saying that, yeah, this is a much, much tougher policy than ever before.
Yeah, there was this well-known journalist, Jan Moix, he published an open letter in a newspaper, Libération. He accused Emmanuel Macron of inhumane acts, barbarism, and indeed the worst politics since 20, 30 years against migrants. It created quite a little buzz. But it's true that Macron seems to be very humane, at least in his words. But in reality, the problem is bigger than ever.
Now, the weather here, always bringing out some nice linguistic expressions. Maud Descamps has taken a closer look at one of them involving feathers and fat. Hello, Maud. Welcome. Tell us more. What is your word of the day?
Hi, Sarah. Hi, Stefan. Well, this week, let's talk about a word, or actually it is more of an expression we've been using a lot the past few days. The expression froid de canard. If I translate literally, it is ducks cold weather. It doesn't mean anything in English, but the proper translation would be a freezing cold. Well, you know, it's been snowing a bit, a lot, on Paris region and in the center of France for the past 3 days. Every transportation was interrupted, planes, trains, buses. Well, snow has not been our friend this week, and people have come to, actually hate it, especially homeless people or outside workers. It's been around 0 degrees this week, pretty chilly, to sleep on the street. So why do we refer to ducks, the bird, when it is really cold outside? Well, let's find out. According to several articles, this the expression could come from the duck hunt, which occurs between October till January, so during the very cold period. Hunters have to actually stay hours in the cold, carrying their gun, waiting for the ducks to show up. But it appears the expression could also be a reference to the duck's migration period, which also occurs during winter. And according to hunters, it is easier to catch a duck at sunset or sunrise, which also are low temperature moment of the day. So all these explanation could actually make us understand why we do use the expression froid de canard. And, Stefan, I have tried to find a similar expression in English, And well, in Britain, I haven't found an expression that could actually be compared to the one we use in French. But in the United States, some say it is cold enough to freeze the balls of a brass monkey. Well, what an expression.
So there was Maud Descamps learning us a new expression in French and also in English. And in French, that would translate something like geler les testicules d'un Saint Jean cuivre. Thank you, Maud Descamps.
Vous écoutez So French.
You are listening to So French.
Now, Emmanuel Macron traveled again a lot again, this week. He went to Senegal.
Can't get enough of it.
He went to Tunisia. And he also went to a far more dangerous country. Well, it's not a country yet. It's a region from France. Corsica, the beautiful
still
island.
Still part of France.
Yes, though. Yes. Once an independent state, but then it was stolen by France at the end of the 18th century. Corsica.
Known for being a birthplace of Napoleon.
Napoleon, yeah, indeed. Actually, Emmanuel Macron is often compared to Napoleon because they were both very young, very ambitious. So he visited Corsica this week. There was, of course, a huge media attention for it. There were a couple of reasons to visit the island. First of all, there was the 20th anniversary of an assassination of the top official on the island, Claude Erignac. He was killed in 1998. He was basically the representative of the French central state on the island. He was killed by a Corsican freedom fighter. And the other reason is that we spoke about that briefly a couple of episodes ago. The nationalists won the regional elections at the end of December, and that means that they now are in power. And they want more autonomy, more respect, and not really independence, but they ask a lot of things of Emmanuel Macron and the central government. But Macron doesn't really seem to want to give
in.
Well,
he hasn't talked much about the Corsican question before visiting Corsica, actually, this week. His statements have been quite vague and quite few, to be honest. So this week when he visited, it was there was a lot of attention and a lot of hopes, of course, on that, you know, he would lay out his project and his program for Corsica. Of course, with the backdrop of this new nationalist leadership.
Yeah, and there was also a big demonstration last week. Thousands of nationalists demonstrated. It was a very peaceful march, which is rather rare on Corsica. But they marched in the island's capital, Ajaccio, a beautiful city, and they demanded more democracy and also respect. Is there something boiling? Is it becoming France's Catalonia?
No, I don't think so.
No.
No, because even though, I mean, there is clearly a nationalist agenda for the Corsicans, but they're not asking for independence. And there are several reasons for this. And maybe the most basic one is that the financial situation of Corsica is nothing like the financial situation of Catalonia. The Corsica has mainly lives out of tourism. Their participation to the GDP in France is like below 1%. I think 0.4% or something. So nothing like the Catalonian question, where Catalonia stands for like 25% of the Spanish GDP. But there is still this idea that the Corsicans want their culture, their specificity, their language to be recognized. And this was very much part of their agenda with the meeting. When they met with the president, they asked for, the language to be recognized. They asked for special fiscal regime. They also called for what they call political prisoners. And this is a very touchy subject. So these are the people who actually were convicted for the killing of the prefect that you mentioned. In Corsica, some would call them political prisoners, they want them to be, first of all, transferred to prisons on Corsica, and then secondly, released.
Yeah. And it should be said that for a very long time, most terrorist attacks in Europe were related to the Corsican freedom fighters. There are still some attacks, but 2 years ago, the Freedom or the Liberation Front, the Corsican Liberation Army, put down their arms. But until like 4 or 5 years ago, there were over 200 attacks every year by the Corsican independent fighters. Now, what's also interesting is that the French Constitution says that the Republic is indivisible.
And it doesn't make any notion of Corsica.
No, nor any other regional differences or languages, whereas most other European countries, they recognize, or at least they respect, regional languages. The European Union also is very active to protect regional languages. But in France, it's really impossible to say, well, maybe there can be more languages than French. And of course, this is a very, you see, the Parisian politicians this week, they said, well, the language of France is French.
Yeah.
Point.
Yeah. No, but France is probably Europe's most centralized country. But it was an opening, though, this week, as Emmanuel Macron said that he would be open to include Corsica in the constitution if there will be, or when, according to him, there will be a rewriting of the French constitution, and he is open to include Corsica in that. So that, I think, it's a big step. After all, it's not at all that what the Corsicans, of course, are asking for. And he clearly said that there's no way that he would agree to give the Corsican language the same status as the French language, for example.
Yeah, and the nationalists also want to create a resident status for people who have been living on the island for 5 years or more. And the idea behind this is to stop real estate speculation by saying that only those who live already for 5 years on the island can buy a house. Now, this sounds a bit protectionist, but actually the problem behind these demands are very real. Because over a third of all the houses on the island are second homes, so owned by a lot of French people living in Paris, for instance, but also by foreigners, because it's, of course, a very, very beautiful holiday destination.
The most beautiful island.
Yeah, absolutely. But a third of all those houses are empty outside of the holidays, which means that the real estate is very expensive, and locals, especially the young, for them, it's increasingly difficult to find housing. So there is a serious issue.
Yeah, they have to leave the island and move somewhere else while someone else is buying the houses on the island. So, I mean, I can absolutely understand the issue here.
Yeah. The problem is, however, that such a measure could be found unconstitutional because it makes it, well, it's basically discrimination. But it's clear that the current government will have to find solutions. And of course, the nationalists now say, well, we don't ask for independence, not now, but maybe in 10 years. So it's something that will go on for the next decade. It's always boiling. It's like a little volcano, Corsica. but if you've never been there, go there. It's beautiful.
Good news. I mean, so French. Not always, but we do bring you some good news some once in a while. This time about the younger generation, because apparently that's where the hope lies.
Yeah.
We tend to complain a lot about youngsters.
Absolutely. Especially older people.
Always. And the bad manners and how they do things in such a weird and strange and much worse way.
And they ruin their lives.
Exactly. But, you know, seems like there is some good news coming out of the younger generation, because they are not at all drugging themselves as previous generations used to do.
They're starting to look more like angels than rebels. There's a new research published this month. Which showed that the use of tobacco, alcohol and cannabis of teenagers under 17 years were at the lowest levels since the start of the century.
Wow.
Now, what are the numbers? For instance, smoking. Everybody thinks that people smoke a lot in France.
They do.
They do. That's true. But nevertheless, the young people are smoking less and less. Only 25% smoked on a daily basis in 2017. Still a very high number, but that was over 32% only 3 years ago. So it's going down very, very quickly.
Remember, this is a generation who has actually grown up with the smoking ban.
Yeah.
In both smoking ban in restaurants, in cafes and public spaces. But also they were not actually allowed to buy cigarettes even because older generations, they could buy cigarettes even when they were underage. But this is the first generation here in France who grown up with both this cigarette ban in public spaces and the ban on buying cigarettes. And it looks like it actually has had an effect.
Yeah, so they smoke less than previous generations. Maybe also the price of a package of cigarettes.
Could have something to do with it, because here in France we're now reaching...
I think it's 9 euros. I don't smoke, but...
I'm not sure it's quite that harsh, but between 7 or 8.
Yeah, it's pretty high. So now drinking, they still drink a lot, but still less than the previous generation. Two-thirds of the children under 17 drank the month before the report, instead of 72% in 2014. Still a very high number, but that's mainly because of the fact that alcohol consumption is some kind of, well, a rite of passage or a social obligation, which starts already in the family, especially in France, of course, with a glass of wine, with dinner, a very... harmless way of introduction to alcohol.
Yeah, and I think that the numbers to watch here, especially, are the binge drinking numbers.
Yes,
where they ask whether the young had more than 5 alcohol units at one certain moment, and those numbers go down as well. And I think that's the most important thing, because, well, we can say France is a country of wine, a country of alcohol, but quite measured.
Yeah,
I would say measured way of dealing with alcohol. As a Swede, I would say it's very measured.
In the Netherlands, binge drinking is a huge problem as
yes.
well, and also in other Northern European countries and the UK, for instance. And binge drinking does exist in France, but it's not a massive phenomenon as it is in the north of Europe. So they drink young. They start drinking young, but it's more a way of living. It's more a social way of drinking. Now... using cannabis, of course, France has one of the toughest legislations.
Now we're going to yeah. where the France really are the top level of Europe.
The most severe legislation of Europe against cannabis use. And it's also the country where people smoke the most in Europe. But this is also going down. Young people under 17 who have tested cannabis went down 9 points in only 3 years. It was almost 48% in 2014, and now it's 39%. So this is also...
That's a big drop.
A big drop, yeah. And it may be related to the drop in smoking tobacco, because if you want to start smoking cannabis, usually you start smoking tobacco, or at least you know... You should now know how to smoke tobacco. So this may be related, but still it's much higher than in the rest of Europe. The regular consumers of cannabis is even higher than a couple of years ago, and it's the highest in Europe. So
we will talk about the debate here in France about the legalization as well at one point.
Yes, indeed, because Macron in his campaign said he want, you know, well, not really legalize it, but
there is a debate, and there's something brewing, at least.
Something smoking. There's a smoking gun. And I don't want to encourage drug use, but it sounds all a bit boring, doesn't it?
The question we should ask, you know, why is this happening? And I mean, what are the young people actually doing instead? The study doesn't really show that, but we can imagine, and we know that computers,
yes, internet, video games,
and cell phones,
yeah,
actually having a much bigger, big part of youngsters' lives today.
I don't put any
value into that.
all those internet, social media, etc., they also have an influence on crime, because crime rate goes down because people are far more inside than outside because they're entertaining themselves inside. And there's also one thing that's really boring with this new generation. Actually, they have far less sex than our generation.
I know.
French millennials, so those are the people born in 1995 or later, have about 53 sexual encounters a year. Very precise number. But it was 65 for young people in the 1990s. So that's our generation.
I think there's something to be followed up in this story.
Absolutely. Yeah. The youngsters are better behaved than their parents. Interesting development.
Now to one of your favorite topics, Stefan. I know this is should be soon a regular part of this podcast because we're going to talk about food.
Yeah, and about the Michelin Guide. Everybody knows it, of course, the famous little red book invented over 118 years ago already.
Wow.
Interestingly enough, I really like this story. It was created by the French brothers André and Édouard Michelin. They were not culinary critics, but they made tires for cars, and they still do.
Yeah.
And they thought, if we make a touristic guide, then you have to travel more. And if you travel more by car, you have to buy more tires. So it was that's the reason why the Michelin Guide exists.
The world's most famous food guide.
Absolutely. It's a real
most
authority.
Most prestigious as
yeah.
well, of course.
And everybody knows the little red guides. And now, this week, the new guide for France was being presented. And the highest level you can get to is 3 stars. And there are 2 new 3-star restaurants in France. Pretty rare that there are new 3-star restaurants. Le Castellet, by the chef Christophe Baquier in the south of France, and Marc Vera in the French Alps, where a menu cost 360 euros per head.
Including wine, though, apparently.
Including wine. Okay, good.
But still quite expensive.
Still quite expensive. Yeah, it's at least 720 euros for dinner for two.
But it'd be worth it.
Yes, but of course, receiving 3 stars is like the Olympic gold for food. Every chef dreams of getting that. But, well, once you have them, sometimes it's a little bit too hard to keep them.
Yeah, but it was an interesting debate, I think, this year when the announcement of the Michelin guide. It was the whole debate about, is it actually the pressure too high? Because last year, it was actually a couple of chefs who decided to drop out of this competition. They said that they want to be free in their creation and in their cooking and not feel that they are actually creating for the taste buds of some anonymous Michelin guide tester. So you have several chefs who dropped out of this competition. And it is interesting because a lot of chefs are also starting to talk about this pressure and about how tough they found it, because it's clear that, you know, well, you get your first star, it will change your life, your restaurant will get all this attention, all these new customers. But of course, once you have that first star, well, you want to keep it.
Yeah.
And then you want to get the second one.
Yeah.
And when you actually, and when you do everything that you can to keep it, of course, it changes your life and it could be sometimes unbearable.
And there are also people who start to question the authority of the Michelin guide. There are now some other guides as well. Of course, there was the Gold Millau, which already existed since the 70s, but there is now, for instance, Le Fooding, which is becoming more and more important as well. And there are other websites, of course. There's the list of the 50 best restaurants in the world. So Michelin is losing a little bit of the authority, but it's still the highest distinction you can get as a chef. Well, that wraps up this edition of Snow French. We hope you have enjoyed it. Please follow us on Twitter at So French News. And if you have any questions or suggestions, send us an email. Our address is sofrench@sofrench.news.
And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or in the TuneIn radio application and to share the podcast with your friends. If you like French music, check out our playlist on Spotify. We update it regularly. Just search for So French Podcast or click the link on our website.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of So French, online and on air on World Radio Paris.
We hope you will join us then. Thank you for listening.
Au revoir.